Good afternoon, everyone. Nate Dickinson here on KATE 1450. We're talking sports, and we've talked to a whole lot of people around the area who have been featured in sports previously in Albert Lea, and this is another one of them. But in this case, Eric Nyquist is still heavily involved in sports as well and has been for a really, really long time. He's the Senior Vice President of Strategic Development at NASCAR right now, and we'll get to all of that later. But Eric, first off, thanks for joining us here, and we talked a little bit about it in our time before we went on right here, but how hectic has it been for you as a NASCAR worker and one of the guys up top trying to manage what has been, as far as just races go, double the workload in this time when you're trying to pack everything into as short a time as possible?
Yeah, you bet, Nate. First, thank you for the time here, and hello to everyone back home. I miss Albert Lea dearly, and I hope everyone's doing well there and enjoying Fountain Lake, and I hope to get back there soon. In terms of work, probably not unlike a lot of folks. When the pandemic hit, it really, it changed everything. As, stating the obvious, this is a surreal moment that's unprecedented, and we're all trying to get our arms around what this means and try to get through it. And, for us, it's been no different. The challenge, obviously, with sports properties, hospitality, we rely on people coming together for sports. So with the practical reality of COVID-19, we've really had to go back and reinvent our business model, how we've gone about it. So, for me, for better or for worse, and don't get me wrong, it's a good problem to have. Whereas I think in a lot of instances in life, getting through the quarantine slowed things down for me and for a number of colleagues, it's been around the clock. Trying to work through, in the early going in particular, how do you plan for contingencies? And for us, it was really about getting the races back on, but doing it in a manner that was safe, was smart, and responsible. And to do all that and to get it to work across, 40 race teams and our drivers and the tracks. And then, for those who've been at NASCAR events, it takes about 2,000 people just to operate the event. The fire and safety individuals, the first responders, in addition to the officials and all the competitors. And so, to get that group bought in on an operating model at a time when, what was paramount was the safety and the surety of everyone involved. It was no small deal, and it took the cooperation, the collaboration of a lot of people. But that, it's been a torrid pace, but as everyone may well know, we were able to bring our sport back racing. We haven't done it with fans. I'm actually in the car right now driving south here in Florida, where this weekend we're going to be introducing guests back at the track. We're going to have 1,000 military members and their family as our honored guests at the track. Again, we'll have all the protocols we've had in place, but we're trying to do this smartly, step by step, and figure our way through this like everyone else.
Yeah, and I know all the sports fans are obviously really happy to have at least something back, with motorsports back now, UFC and boxing coming too, and we have golf kicking off this weekend as well. It's obviously very welcome that sports are back in general. I'm sure people are very excited to at least start getting back into the stands as quickly as possible. I want to start and kind of go back with you, Eric, to your time in Albert Lea and just kind of how it all got started, your involvement in sports. When you were growing up, even before high school, what are your memories of kind of how you fell in love with sports, as you were involved with a whole lot of different sports and a lot of other things as well, but we'll get to that in a minute. But what do you remember as being the things that kind of made you attached to this more so than anything else?
Well, I think, first I'd just say, growing up in Albert Lea, I made so many mistakes and stumbles and the sense of community that I always felt was a part of, good, bad, or indifferent on my own, but the community was always there. And being a part of that was huge. And I think the YMCA it played a big part in sports for me growing up. Their programs, the leagues that they helped put together. Looking back on it now that I'm a parent, I can say that, I got to I had a lot of really good adults and good human beings that were involved and helped to really get involved in our lives with sport. Now, it was a great experience. Park and Rec Department was really active. Years later, I was a park leader myself. And so through that, and then, traveling team sports and things of the like, it was just a great experience. I don't know if I was a good athlete. I don't know if I was a bad athlete. I kind of fit in and was part of all of it. And I sure enjoyed it. But most importantly, my very best friends to this day are the people I played sports with in Albert Lea. I got lucky. I landed great friends from the very get-go, so I don't need new ones. I'm so grateful for that. I can't say enough about how grateful I am for that. And I had a coach in high school in football, Dennis Baldus, who was just really instrumental. Had a huge impact on me. Corey Jurley coached one of the traveling team basketball teams I played on when I was younger. These were men of fiber. Real leaders. People who really cared and had a great moral compass. So that's for me. How did it contribute to my good fortune working in sports? I don't know. What I will say is it had a huge impact on me personally, though. No matter what I was doing for an occupation, that's what I remember most about sports was, how much I got from it in that regard.
Well, before we go forward, I am not going to let you off the hook in saying that you don't know if you were a good athlete. You went All-State as a linebacker in football, so I'd say you did all right. Before we go on, though, I wanted to ask, because you did a lot of different things. You were involved in theater in Albert Lea, and you did a whole bunch of things in college as well, alongside of sports. But when did you kind of figure out that sports was what you wanted to go into as a career?
Not to take it off path, but real quick, I do want to say the Albert Lea Community Theater, that institution was, honestly, if I had to point to one thing, and one thing and one thing only, that just had a profound impact on me, that was it. And, Joan Mushler was really involved in the program, and Ann Earhart, and there were just a ton of people of years past who just, So I can't say enough good things about the community theater. I understand it's still vibrant and it's such a wonderful thing. And so, anyways, I can't pass up an interview without hitting on that. For me, for sports, it's just, it's one of those things where, when I was an undergraduate, I had an injury. I went to Division III school and played football there in lacrosse. And I'm a poorly built guy and my back really was hurt, and I was not able to finish it out that way, and I got an opportunity to be a student assistant coach. I really enjoyed that, so I was thinking I wanted to go into maybe, coaching potentially, or work in sports, and at the time, I was applying for graduate assistant opportunities in football, and I applied to law school and business school, and, I had the good fortune to get into law school and business school at one place, and so I decided, maybe I'll do that. But I really, that wanting to work in sports at that point, I was like, I didn't really, the idea of a lot of other professions, what did I know? Not much. But what I do know is at the time that generated a lot of energy in my belly, the idea of some other professions, not as much. So I thought, if I'm going to go do this, let's do it. So when I went to work there, I'm going to school. I went to work for the U.S. Soccer Federation. The women's national team was really in its initial stages, and they only had two people working on the team, on the business side, or anything aside from coaches, that is. And so I had an opportunity to work with that team. I didn't get paid a dime, and I was doing everything from making copies to setting up travel reservations, whatever, right? But eventually, over time, I got a chance to help negotiate sanction agreements and do some really neat things. And so I really enjoyed it. It was a great experience. And through that, I had the good fortune to get my first job out of graduate school working for the National Football League.
And I do have to touch on, before we go any further, just again, I did a little bit of research before we started. Your first year law advisor was Barack Obama. I mean, I don't even know what to ask. What was that like? Who was he back then?
Well, listen, I mean, again, I am, and I joke, but there's a lot of truth in it, too. You know, I'm, in a lot of respects, I'm kind of the Forrest Gump of sports. Mm. You know, that's, I had the good benefit of President Obama being my first year law advisor. It's true. Walked into his, he had a basement office that had no windows. And listen, whether you do or don't like his politics, I do understand that. But I will say, an incredibly kind and good man. He was running the poverty and law clinic at the time. He had a window. He had an office that had no windows. It was in the basement. And who would have known? I had no idea that he would be the president one day. But I do recall what a kind and generous man he was, he's a good human being.
And also at that time at the University of Chicago, he started sending out letters, a whole bunch of them, like thousands of letters out to just people in sports, just trying to get any sort of hold on something and advice and ways for you to get ahead. How many letters did you get back from people? How many people did you hear back when you were doing that kind of stuff? And also, what do you think gave you, either growing up in Albert Lea or just in your experiences, that kind of gumption, that kind of go get 'em to be able to have that aggressiveness and kind of front foot forward kind of attitude to go and reach for what you wanted like that?
Yeah, gosh, I don't know. I will say this, and I mean, there's plenty of people can testify to this in Albert Lea. You know, I was an incredibly imperfect kid growing up, and I slipped and fell more than a few times. But I will tell you this, every time it did, you know, I had a whole community there to catch me, and whether I deserved it or not, they helped me get back to where I need to go with the path, and I learned from it, and I'm grateful for that, you know, and I think it allowed me to be smarter and better. I don't know, maybe I was just, I had a false sense of being, you know, bulletproof due to that support. So for me, it was, it was just a matter of just getting up on it. And the way I thought about it was, at the time, you know, listen, if I'm going to be a lawyer or, you know, I don't know what, you know, listen, and that was likely, and I was pretty much like, I figured that would be the outcome. But, you know, I thought, well, what the heck, you know, I want to at least look back on this and feel like I wasn't just, you know, sitting around, you know, watching TV. I was getting after it, at least trying to put my best foot forward. And so that's kind of how I looked at it, right? So. And I've always been one to kind of be structured about, in maybe a somewhat anal way with how I go about it. And so I'd carve out that time, and I thought, you know, heck, I can do 30 minutes a day, right? So I do 30 minutes a day, and I'd write letters. So, you know, initially I didn't have a lot of success, I won't lie, but over time you'd make a contact here or there, and they'd make time on the phone for you, and then you try to leverage that and do another. And you know, I mean, listen, I was a professional student, for heaven's sake, so. You know, if you're not being productive, you got time to do it. And I didn't have a family, and you know, I was on the perpetual school path. It felt like, you know, 4 years. So you have a lot of time to write letters. So, mm-hmm. You know, gratefully, over time, I developed a network, and then ultimately, as I figured it might. I mean, this is the only thing I'll give myself credit for was knowing how imperfect the labor market would be on this one, and that it would be, you know, good fortune, you know, ball bounced in the right way. And so it happened. And I was able to get that job working at the NFL.
Yeah, so you went from the NFL right out of law and business school for a year. Then you go to Chicago, work with the Bulls and White Sox after Jerry Reinsdorf hears your name. And then you've been at NASCAR since 2005. Again, you mentioned you've been kind of the Forrest Gump of sports in a sense. And I can't say I disagree, just looking over everything that you've been able to do from when you started out in college through what you've been at now. And I guess in the same sense, if you're the Forrest Gump of sports, give us some of those highlights of working with those teams and those people throughout the past 20-plus years.
Yeah, I mean, listen, again, it has less to do with me being any good than just the good fortune of you know, literally the opportunity and, you know, being a fly on the wall. But, mentioned President Obama and the impact of that. I had an early mentor, Melissa Apsel was her name. She was general counsel of the U.S. Soccer just a really good attorney, really smart. Got to work with my first boss, Roger Goodell, Neil Glad, who was later was the president of the New York Jets, and myself, really, and another individual were the team that was working on stadium development and kind of the league economic model. And I, of course, significantly junior to Roger and Neil, but it was an incredible opportunity. You know, just we worked really hard and long hours, but that was a great experience for me. I learned a lot, and I grew a lot. And Roger is relentless. I mean, he's a bulldog, and he's very smart, and he is a hard worker. I mean, he puts it all forward, and so that work ethic and understanding kind of the pace of play that you have to be good with was a big impact. And then, I can't say enough about Mr. Reinsdorf. I mean, Jerry, and I was really privileged. I was able to report into him for 5 years, and he's a guy who truly walks the walk, and is just a man of the highest character. I can't say enough about Jerry. And then it's been just here working at NASCAR. It's been a really cool deal to some of the athletes. Is where I have found it could be challenged at times once you kind of get behind the curtain, because they're people like us, and we all respond differently. So no judgment intended. It's just, I will say this though, it's a neat deal when you get people like Jimmy Johnson and Bubba Wallace, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Daniel Suarez. I mean, you go through. We have so many drivers, and they are just such high caliber people in terms of how they want to treat people, how they want to be seen, and not in a corporate way like this is what we need to do, but just I really have it's had a tremendous impact on me as well, because you see the opportunity for doing better. Certainly when I compare it to maybe sometimes when I see what other athletes do with that blessing. So
now I do want to ask, and again, I don't want to be too much of a hard-hitting journalist in this conversation. This is more just about telling your story in sports and everything, but just with what's gone on in the last couple of days, were you involved at all in the decision room and conversation in choosing to remove the Confederate flag from NASCAR races on Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is something as a group, we sat down, and this is something we had to deal with and face, and I do understand that it means different things to different people. But I can only speak from my perspective, and that while it may be true how it relates to other people, it's something that is not a welcoming sign in a really material way. And at the end of the day, what I love about our sport and our fans and our people is, and our competitors, is NASCAR's for everyone. And no matter how big you are, no matter how small you are, no matter the color of your skin, how you love, how you worship, where you're from, if you can wheel a car, you can wheel a car. If you can turn a wrench, you can turn a wrench. If you're a brilliant engineer, you're a brilliant engineer. And you can compete on the highest level against each other. And I think that's awesome. And so this isn't about judgment or what this is about is we want NASCAR for everyone, and we want people welcome. And like many things in life, you can do what you want on your own private property, but as we move forward here, we want people, when they come to the racetrack, to feel welcome and a part of that community. And there may be some fans that will feel differently about that, and we understand that. But I will tell you from experience, time and time again, I brought people to the track from all different backgrounds, and this is that. And they look, at me, and they're like, "How? What?" And the reason is because, again, to a whole race of people, that is a sign of fear. It's a sign of hatred. It's a sign of lynchings. And whether that's right or wrong, that's what it is. And there's no place for it when we're putting forward family events about bringing people together around a love for racing.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's well put. Eric, before we let you go here, I do want to ask real quick, for someone who took such great advantage of the time that you had in Albert Lea and afterwards, if anyone listening to this is either growing up right now in Albert Lea or trying to get started here, what do you think were some of the keys to you moving up in your industry so quickly, and also being able to do it in such a variety of ways where you kind of moved all around and saw a little bit of everything. And what do you think are some of the things you've learned that other people who are trying to start out in whatever they're doing can do to make sure that they're taking whatever they have and taking advantage of it to the fullest?
You know, I don't, gosh, what do I know? I've been, you know, listen, I feel like I've been very fortunate. You know, what I would say is, and again, people don't need to hear it from me, for heaven's sakes. I think the biggest epiphany for me growing up, and I say that because I still feel like I am, is just realizing that, you know, growth and change, at least for me, never stopped. It just continued. And so I think that sense of introspection and wanting to always be better and do better, and that's something that I'm, you know, I don't know if I knew it, but I found it and I'm grateful for it. And I think it's something that, you know, I think leads us all to a better place, because, you know, obviously there's only so much in life we can control, right? And so I've had a good bounce of the ball and I'm grateful for that. And, you know, pay it forward and be kind, treat people right. You know, eventually the law of averages comes out pretty well in your end if you're a good person, is what I found.
All right, that's Eric Nyquist here on KATE 1450. Albert Lea native, current Senior Vice President of Strategic Development for NASCAR. And as we've gone over, he's done a whole bunch of things throughout his career as well. We thank you for taking some time to talk to us for a little bit, Eric, here on KATE. And I know everyone at Albert Lea is going to be looking forward to hearing from you again and hopefully seeing you again soon. I know Albert Lea means a lot to you, and I know you'll be back here as soon as you can.
Yeah, you bet, Nate. I appreciate it. Again, hopefully this has made some good time for people if they're having to sit on the combine or something like that. But I miss everyone back home, and I sure hope to get back there soon. Thanks again.